joined by ESPN's Tim Bontemps on the Coulter Automotive Group sports line right now. Tim, thank you for the time, and how you doing today?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Doing pretty good. I think Suns fans are pretty happy with what happens on Monday night. James Jones able to get Chris Paul back, to get Cameron Payne back, and to add JaVale McGee. So I guess let's just start there. Nationally, what was the perception of the Suns, you know, when that season wrapped up? Was the thought that was sort of a fluke, or they could do this again? And then I guess the second part is, does what they did on Monday night change anything?
I mean, I definitely wouldn't say it's a fluke. I mean, I would say the Suns had a pretty fortuitous path through the playoffs, right? I mean, they play a Lakers team that ended up with Anthony Davis out in that first round series. They play a Nuggets team without their starting backcourt, and they play a Clipper team without Kawhi Leonard, right? Mm-hmm. But that being said, they had to beat the teams in front of them. They got to the NBA Finals. There's no certainly was a fantastic season for them. And, yeah, look, I think it's certainly good that Robert Sarver paid up and got Chris Paul back and got campaign back and went and signed JaVale McGee. I don't know if I particularly am thrilled to pay JaVale McGee $5 million next year, though it's a one-year deal, so it doesn't really matter. And I'll be curious to see if campaign can live up to that contract. It's obviously not a ton of money. It's certainly a good story to bring him back. I thought he looked pretty overmatched as the playoffs went on after that one huge game he had against the Clippers. Didn't think he played very well against the Bucks, but again, you're talking about a guy who's a backup point guard and a nice feel-good story. So I think the biggest thing is that Robert Sarver was willing to pay those guys and fill out the roster. And, you know, the Suns are certainly going to be right in the mix in the West. And, you know, it's going to be a pretty interesting race for the top of the West next season between the Suns, you know, a healthy Laker team. Hopefully Jamal Murray is able to come back at some point for the Nuggets. Luka Doncic is obviously playing great for Slovenia this summer. The Mavs are going to be interesting. You know, you've got whatever happens in Portland, whatever happens to Kawhi Leonard. I mean, there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff going on in the West right now. So the Suns look pretty good and certainly have a chance to be a factor again next season.
Just to go back to Cameron Payne for a second, we were talking about this yesterday. Like, it felt like he just clearly had more value to the Suns and the role he's in, and they know, you know, it works what he's doing within their system and for Monty Williams behind Chris Paul. But at the same time, it does feel like every year in free agency, there's always one team that comes along and is like, hey, we happened to watch that Clippers game. We'll give you 3 years, $30 million. Are you surprised at all that didn't happen with some random team this year?
No, I'm not, because if you look around the league, there's not a lot of guys who got the full mid-level anywhere, right? Like, P.J. Tucker got $7 million from the Heat. I'm trying to think of guys who signed a full mid-level deal. Mm-hmm. I think P.J. McConnell essentially signed the equivalent of that with the Indiana Pacers to go back there. But otherwise, I don't know if a full mid-level was handed out to anybody. So the fact that, I mean, look, the fact that Patty Mills, I know he clearly wanted to play for a contender. Patty Mills is better than Cameron Payne, right? And Patty Mills, even though he's older, signed a deal for the tax MLE. So I'm not surprised that that's sort of where the campaign market landed. And again, I think it's a fine signing. Like, if he can play up to, if he can play to the level he did for the most part last season, it's a perfectly fine backup point guard number. And it's a great story, right? I mean, that guy a year ago was signing up to go play in the bubble and be an end-of-the-bench guy for the Suns. And now he's played in the NBA Finals and has a multi-year contract, has completely revived his career. I mean, it's a really cool story, and it was nice to see him stay in Phoenix, where he's clearly found a home with the Suns.
Hey, Tim, where's your confidence level that Chris Paul can replicate his near MVP season over the next 3 years for the Suns?
I mean, pretty low. You know, I mean, I would say the end of that deal is probably not going to look great, right? But at the same time, if you're the Suns and you just made it back to the playoffs for the first time in 11 years and you made the NBA Finals for the first time in almost 30 years, you got to re-sign Chris Paul, right? You got to try to win next year with Devin Booker and Mikal Bridges and DeAndre Ayton, and you got to hope that he's good enough to be a mix next year for them, or to keep them in the mix next year in the West. So, you know, if you're signing a 36-year-old or a soon-to-be 36-year-old point guard for 120 over four, you're going to assume that the back couple of years of that deal aren't great. But at the same time, people thought the back couple of years of the last deal Chris signed weren't going to be great, right? And look at the year he just came off of. He opted out of $44 million to sign up for this new contract. So if there is anybody who's going to defy the odds on that, you know, of the old guys who signed deals this week, it's Kyle Lowry in Miami and Chris Paul in Phoenix, two guys who have already proven to be, you know, pretty rugged, determined players who keep themselves in shape and are great leaders and have already kind of defied Father Time to this point. So I get why both of those teams were willing to do what they did to bring them in, and in Phoenix's case, to keep Chris around after the year the Suns had.
Talking to ESPN's Tim Bontemps. Tim, when you look at what the Lakers have done, you know, bringing in Russell Westbrook, but then also really revamping the rest of that roster behind LeBron and Anthony Davis, it's obviously changes. I mean, that's not an organization that's accustomed to losing in the first round. Do you like what they've done? Do you think this makes them significantly better, or is it more just kind of a wait and see because there's so much change?
You cut out when you said which team. Which team were you talking about?
The Lakers.
I didn't really like what the Lakers have done at all. I mean, I think their minimum signings have been fine. You know, Kendrick Nunn for the tax on the lead was a nice move, but I really didn't like the Russell Westbrook trade. I think the fit with LeBron James is pretty disastrous. He has to have the ball in his hands. He doesn't play defense. He's not a shooter. I think that's going to end up being sort of an oil and water situation. Maybe I'll end up being proven wrong on that, and they'll find a way to coexist, but if we've learned anything about Russell Westbrook over his, 13 years in the NBA, it's that he's going to do what he wants, right? I mean, he had a commercial where the song in the commercial is, "Now I'm going to do what I want," after Kevin Durant left, right? So, like, the idea he's going to come in and, like, be subservient to LeBron James and be a cutter and play off the ball and play defense, like, I just don't see that, right? He's going to do what he's going to do, and I just don't think the fit with LeBron is going to work very well. And as you guys know, being in Phoenix, that Laker team was built around its defense, right? And now they've basically gotten rid of all their good defensive players, other than Anthony Davis, and they're going to be playing a lot of guys who are old and there are some shooters, but there's just not many good defensive players. So I think it's going to be a real challenge for Frank Vogel to make all these puzzle pieces fit together in a way that the Lakers can be the same level of championship contender they obviously were 2 years ago when they won, and they were last year when they went in the playoffs as one of the top seeds in the West.
When you just look around the NBA as a whole, obviously Miami's gone all in on this upcoming season. The Chicago Bulls have made some very notable moves. Are there any teams that jump out at you as teams that have dramatically improved from where they were when the season ended?
You know, that's the funny thing about this week so far is that I would say the answer to that is no. I think Miami clearly got better. Getting Kyle Lowry, I like them keeping Duncan Robinson, and I think PJ Tucker's a decent fit. But, like, if you look around the league, other than Miami, who got really way better this week? I would say nobody did, right? You look at the teams atop the league, you know, we just talked about the Lakers taking a step back. I would say the Suns basically treaded water. I would say the same for the Bucks. I'd say the same for the Brooklyn Nets. Patty Mills is a nice signing, but Patty Mills wouldn't have really move the needle for them against the Bucks in that series, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the Clippers are going to be without Kawhi Leonard. They haven't done much. The Warriors made a couple nice minimum moves, but they didn't make any dramatic additions. You know, so it's been sort of a lot of rearranging of deck chairs around the league. Or teams just sort of standing pat. The Mavs re-signed guys, added Reggie Bullock. That's a nice pickup, but that's not a huge difference maker. So, yeah, it's sort of funny. I had an executive at last night call me and say, first thing he said was, who are the winners and losers this week? And I said, well, Miami's a winner. And then I thought about it and was like, well, I guess the Wizards are winners because they traded Westbrook. Like, there's just not a, you know, so usually we come out of the offseason, oh, man, these three or four teams really got dramatically better and are going to be a factor, right? And this year, I think because of a combination of who was available and the fact that most of the good players stuck with their current teams, I just don't think there's that same churn in terms of teams really improving themselves that we've seen in past years.
Last one, Tim, is there anything to read into the Kawhi Leonard situation that he hasn't signed with the Clippers yet?
It's hard to know, right? I would say no. I mean, if you just look around, there's nobody with cap space, right? So it's not like 2 years ago when Kawhi went to the Clippers and everybody was thinking, well, maybe he'll sign with the Knicks, or maybe he'll sign with the Raptors, or maybe he'll sign with the Lakers, and, like, where's he going to go? Like, this year all the money's gone, so they're either going to have to come up with some sort of a sign-and-trade somewhere, or he's just going to re-sign with the Clippers eventually, and I would assume it's going to be the latter, right? But given it's a Kawhi, I guess you could say you never know, but given the amount of time he spent trying to get to L.A. and all the work he went into, you know, getting Paul George there and being able to have kind of whatever he wants in L.A., being back home, being able to live at home, et cetera, I think it's hard to imagine this ends with anything other than him re-signing to stay with the Clips going forward.
Yeah, makes sense. Tim Bontemps, great stuff, man. Thank you for the time. Enjoy the offseason, all right?
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks for having me.